So I left the corporate life to go full-time in real estate and be a stay-at-home mom. And after our second was born, I realized the stay-at-home mom investor life was not cut out for me. So we wound up putting them into school, and I just started thinking about what do I want to do with my time now, and found out about this fractional CFO thing, and it sounded fun. So that's where I'm at now.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy, the CEO, co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Tiffany Bogle from Insight CFO Services, and we're going to chat about setting boundaries with your clients, managing your clients, how her approach to setting up her fractional CFO business, which has been a bit more ambitious than I would say your average fractional CFO, and how she's gone about doing that. But before we get stuck into that today, Tiffany, you're very welcome to the podcast. Why don't you open us up by telling us something about you that not many people know?
Yeah, thank you. So I was a band nerd in high school, absolutely loved marching band. And it wasn't so much the music aspect as the socializing. And I loved it so much that I wound up marrying a band director and became the band mom. So I got to go do all the fun socializing and chaperoning without having to play the instrument. So a lot of fun there.
Wow. So the band mom, is that a real thing? That kind of person who's looking after everyone and making sure they get there on time and stuff like that.
Normally it's an actual mom of one of the students, but I partnered with my husband on it and helped him out until he eventually wound up leaving the profession to go into full-time real estate. But we had a fun handful of years. The only thing was there was not a lot of sleep on the weekends because of football games and competitions, and it got exhausting, but it was fun for a few years.
Very good. Yeah. Because it's a big deal in the US, especially, right? Bands with those I forgot about the football games, but the shows are almost bigger than the games sometimes, right? People really get into them. So what's the biggest thing you got to do? What's the biggest crowd you got in front of?
His band got to play at the Georgia Dome, or I guess Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So it's the big stadium. The football team made it to state, which was awesome. They wound up winning, but it was terrible because we had football games right up to Christmas. So there was no break, but it was so much fun.
All right. Very cool. All right. You're the first band mom I've had on the podcast. I can say that with confidence. So that's pretty cool. So maybe you could just give us a bit of your background, because you are not someone who's become a fractional CFO because they have to in any way, but let's rewind a little bit and maybe you could just give a bit of your background before we get stuck into the main topic.
Absolutely. So I worked a 10-year corporate career in healthcare analytics and absolutely loved my job, but I saw the trajectory of my career being a lot of travel, being away from my family, and accidentally got into real estate investing because my husband had a house. We were just dating at the time. He had this house that he was completely mismanaging. So I stepped in, started helping him, and we decided to build up a real estate portfolio. So we did that over a handful of years and had our first son. So I left the corporate life to go full-time in real estate and be a stay-at-home mom. And after our second was born, I realized the stay-at-home mom investor life was not cut out for me. So we wound up putting them into school, and I just started thinking about what do I want to do with my time now, and found out about this fractional CFO thing, and it sounded fun. So that's where I'm at now.
Very good. So can I ask you a little bit about the real estate investing? There's lots of gurus in this space. The OG, was it Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Kiyosaki? Mm-hmm. And then these days, I see a lot on YouTube, Divisive Character. Which sort of brand of real estate investor would you say you are? Is there someone else you follow?
Yeah, we were single family homes, long-term rentals. Right. We rent some by the room, almost like a boarding house, just to offer affordable housing. And then we just wrapped up our first Airbnb project. So we are not trying to build a huge, massive portfolio of hundreds of houses. I think we're at 15 now, which is enough to sustain our family and give us a legacy for our kids. But we are not trying to grow something massive and super cumbersome.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was just listening to this concept of what's enough is a big thing online at the moment. And people who have got to a billion or a huge amount, I've heard them say, actually, the ideal range is around 25 million. If you're 25 million, 20 million, that's, you get 99% of the benefit of having a billion with 10% of the hassle. Knowing when to stop is a thing a lot of people don't know. So this is interesting, has put you in a situation more or less, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you could be anything in the world. You could be a circus clown. You have all this, you could be a president, you could be anything. And you've decided to become a start really, I wouldn't say you've decided to become a fractional CFO, but you've decided to start a fractional CFO business. So first up, why that? Surely, do you just have a passion for it, or why? It's not your typical thing people would do for fun.
I have education in finance. I got my master's at Georgetown in finance and never really worked a true finance job in the corporate side. But in our businesses that we've had, that's what I was doing. And I sat down one day and was really just pondering, like, why were we so successful with our real estate investments? Because I mean, most people don't invest as fast as we did and grow to have financial freedom. I think it was in 4 years that we did it. So I really started thinking about why, and I realized it was my finance skills and being able to have a good strategy and high level picture of our goals and then how to execute on them, and realize that's my superpower. And having this financial freedom from the real estate has allowed me to think more about, like, the existential question of why am I here? And I think it's to help people grow their businesses through that financial leadership and guidance. So it's, in a way, it's a calling, I feel like. I love the number crunching, and that's what I enjoyed about our real estate business. So it just was a logical step to pursue this field.
Yeah. You're touching on something there, which I've coming to realize, which is how powerful a fractional CFO is. Like, a lot of people lead with, God forbid, getting your taxes done or even doing cash flow projections, and they talk a lot of this stuff. But actually, what you talked about there was creating financial freedom for, you've done it for yourself. But I think that's the thing that only, maybe not only, but certainly a fractional CFO is one of the people who has the skills to get you there a lot quicker than you're likely to get there by yourself. Like, it can be, a lot of people have that dream of not being required to work on something and having financial independence. But pose yourself the question, are you better you doing that yourself, you as a programmer, James, or you a programmer, James, with a trained professional who can give you a step-by-step guide to actually getting there? So if you don't mind, I'd like to be a little bit nosy and wonder, okay, so was it your ability to, what actual skills allowed you to get to that milestone within 4 years? Was it, were you great at Excel? Was you doing bank applications? Was it what the hell gave you the leg up over other people?
I think it was Excel sheets. Yeah, I have a million of them. Of course I do. I'm a CFO. I loved it. So, like, in the evenings before kids, now after kids, in the evenings I'm crashed. But before kids, in the evenings, I would just sit and look at the numbers. And I had a conversation with my husband of, what's the return on the equity we have in the properties? And can we potentially sell some to increase the cash flow in other avenues? So, for example, we had a very clear goal of what we needed for me to quit my job. And the cash flow we had wasn't working. So that's why we started doing the rent by the room boarding house type, because the cash flow on that was significantly higher. We recently had a couple properties that we sold. They were doing okay financially, but we knew we had some big, like, tree removal that was going to eat up a lot of the cash flow. So we had some big CapEx coming up and decided, you know what, let's just sell these and not have to deal with that. And then we rolled it into this Airbnb that we just finished. And it has been a slam dunk of a deal, but we wouldn't have been able to do it if we didn't start small and keep analyzing to see, could we potentially trade up or make some shifts in the business to hit that next level?
Okay, so you used a bit of jargon that I'm sure most of our listeners will understand, but I didn't. So return on equity, what does that mean?
Yeah, so as a real estate investor, we look at initially at cash on cash return. So if we put 100 grand in the house, how much is it going to make on that 100 grand? And that, we did great. We were making great returns. But over time, we realized we had built up so much equity because the house values increased so much, but they were only making, you know, a couple thousand dollars a year. Right. So making a couple thousand on 100,000 in equity didn't make sense.
Okay.
So we sold them and rolled it into another deal. And in the US, we did a tax exchange, so we didn't have to pay taxes on that money. And we are in the process of refinancing this new deal, and we'll get all that equity out as cash So in essence, it looks like we sold them because we get the cash from it, but it's all rolled into another property that's making even more money.
Okay. So let's say a civilian like me, for example, might just say, okay, I bought a house and I'm getting whatever, $2,000 a month for renting it out. I'm ignoring the value that's building up within the house. I'm just thinking, I just got to try and buy the next one. With that finance mindset, you look at the asset, what you could do with it, and that. And then with that mindset, I guess you're able to make bigger moves or see opportunities that you wouldn't see otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. It's the way we view it is we have these army of dollar bills, whether that's the equity or the cash flow coming in. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure those dollar bills are working as hard as they can for us. And they weren't working hard enough. So we fired them and brought in some new ones.
Very interesting. Okay. My mind's racing because we have an apartment in town at the moment and it's got some cash flow. We've just paid it off, I think. And then I'm just thinking, hold on, how does this apply to me? We paid it off. It's in that property, which I don't believe is going to appreciate very much. And maybe it's a different way to look at it. Maybe I should be thinking about selling it and putting it out of bills to work in some other way.
Yeah. Or getting a loan on it and using that cash to buy additional properties and increasing your cash flow.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. We'll get on to in a second how you do this for your ideal customer, medical practices. Yes. But we have something else to hit on before we get to that, which is you've decided to go. I want to first go into when you set up this business, you didn't just say, I'm putting my shingle out and I'm going to start asking people for fractional CFO work. You took a slightly different work, even though you did need to do it or you didn't need to do it. You raised debt to start your business. So tell me about the decision to do that and what you've used that debt to start the business.
My husband and I decided to, instead of bootstrapping like we did in our real estate business with kids now and the real estate portfolio, I didn't want to try to do it all myself. So we took out a loan on our house. It was not a crazy amount of money, but enough that I could fund a team. I brought in a virtual assistant, someone to help with my LinkedIn messaging and marketing. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a CFO on my team and a salesperson that are highly undercompensated right now, but they're going to get a huge piece of the pie when we build it and hopefully down the road sell it. So my intention has always been to grow this and then sell it at some point down the road. I think the landscape of fractional CFO is it's pretty new and cutting edge. And I think in 5-10 years, I could sell this to an accounting firm or someone that wants to expand into CFO space. So that's always been my intention. I know that I personally have about a 3-year attention span on any kind of job or work that I'm doing. So I'm going to use that to my advantage and have a plan that at some point I will step out of running the business and let someone else step in as the CFO or CEO of the business. Mm. So I've always had grand plans for it, but having this real estate to support my family makes it a lot easier to take some risk.
And so have you set targets around that? So if that was external money, they would have expectations on return on their own capital and they would have, I don't know, what they would think about it. So have you decided, okay, this is a go, no go, when I have to get certain revenue targets, or are you all in and you're going to do what it takes, no matter how long it takes?
We're just all in. We're going to do this until we get to the goals we have. And I figure my worst case scenario is, let's say the whole thing flops and I've got this debt. I can go get a standard job. I can find another business venture. We can buy another house. We have equity that we could tap into. So I have a lot of exit strategies is a worst case scenario. But the risk was worth it because the upside is infinite. The downside is that debt and that's it. And that's not a huge sum of money compared to the upside. I don't want to sit here and say this is for everyone. It's a strategy that we're taking and it's risky, absolutely. But I didn't want to bootstrap it because we have two little kids and I didn't want to take away from them. And so I brought in people to assist me in growing this. And the hope is that we get it to our targets. We don't know, obviously, but we're putting everything in. And the worst case scenario is not that scary at the end of the day.
Okay. Well, what I'm hearing so far is, it's clear you take this finance strategy to what you're actually doing and you've been walking this walk. You can't really complain that you've just been in an office somewhere doing it for someone else. And that's quite a different proposition when you're dealing with entrepreneurs or people who are running their own businesses. It makes a big difference if you know someone who isn't just talking about it, but they've actually done it, right? And taken the step. And I love this idea of looking at risk. Like your upside is infinite almost, and the downside is finite, right? So that sounds, as long as you're happy with that risk, then you make that bet all day long and you're betting on yourself. Best bet to make.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So let's hit on a topic which is, I think, is one that's common for all people who in business, basically, but it's around setting boundaries with clients and staff or generally. And I know you have some thoughts on this, on how to set those boundaries.
Yeah,
tell us a bit about how you approach setting expectations with customers and managing the situations where they're crossing a boundary maybe they didn't know existed.
Yeah, I had no boundaries in any aspect of my life until recently. Hmm. My husband left for military duty and I had a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old. And I was running a handful of businesses, including the rentals. We have a real estate education business, the CFO business. And I was not setting firm enough boundaries with nannies, with any support that I had. And right. It led to an extended burnout period where I was barely able to function for a few months. So it was the rock bottom moment of I have to get some boundaries in place or I'm not going to continue to be able to run this business. Mm. So I have learned setting very clear expectations up front is key. So establishing what you want out of the relationship, that client engagement, and what you're willing to give, and having very firm boundaries. And I'm open to outside of contact, outside of our scheduled calls, but I'm very clear that you're not going to get an immediate response, what the expected timeline of a reply would be. And it's, you want to support your clients, but not at the expense of your other clients or the business or anything else going on in your life. And I have just learned that my happiness, my family's happiness, and just a level of like mental sanity is more important than making somebody else feel comfortable or happy.
And so tell me about, like, how do you do that? Do you use your calendar to schedule, like, when you'll be available or what? Because it's all very well saying that, but then life happens. Everyone has a plan to get punched in the face. So, you know, what are you doing differently now, which just means that people know more clearly how to deal with you?
Yeah, it's absolutely calendar management. And no, I have to be clear on what I want. And I think that was something I struggled with previously, was what are my expectations for my own calendar and my own time? So I've gotten very clear on my time blocking and when I'm available. And Calendly or any kind of scheduling app is fantastic because you don't have to sit there and negotiate with someone about what times you're available. They just find something that works for them. And it makes the boundary easier to hold. And that's been a game changer for me, is just having very set times that I'm available. And I'm available for those times, but otherwise it might take a few days.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then how about on the other side, like when you're dealing with someone you've tasked something on? I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you say, okay, can you help me with this? And it gets done, but it's not really the way you want it to be done. Like, how's your approach to specking out your team so they know what expected of them?
Yeah, I think it starts with trust on both sides and compassion. So as you're having that conversation of, hey, this isn't what I was thinking. One, I own a lot of times it's probably how I communicated it. So just trying to be super clear on the exactly what I need. And then it's just being compassionate. You're not going to get fired because you messed up this one thing. Being a human at the end of the day, I think, is so important. I've worked for some really terrible bosses and I've learned what I don't want to be like. And that has just really informed how I approach my team. And I, 2 members on my team were former mentors. So that has been really interesting to navigate. They were above me at one point, and we joked that we worked in our corporate careers together, and we would joke that one day they would work for me. And here we are. So it's been really interesting. And I remember having to have a really tough conversation about how we dropped the ball on a client situation. And it was not fun. It was so uncomfortable because this is my friend. This is a former mentor. But it came from compassion and was not blaming, just saying, hey, this happened. Can we not do that again? And it was very well received. And they know I'm coming at it from a place of growing the business and wanting to do the best for our clients. So it's all in the intention, I think, and just the delivery. I just had a conversation, but I didn't beat around the bush. I was direct, but also compassionate.
Yeah. Benny, who works on our team, he's an account executive. He plays soccer professionally at the weekend. It's a game with a small white ball that you kick with your feet, and we play over here. And he has an interesting approach to feedback, which is on the soccer field, if you mess up, your teammate come over and they'll scream at you right there and then, you just messed up, don't do that again, you can do better. And then it's done and they move on. And then the guy scores a goal or whatever, and then they'll equally just go over and say, that was awesome, and they'll jump on the ground and put their jumpers on their head or whatever they do, I don't know. But the point is that the feedback is immediate and public always, which is interesting because it's not that, you know, you have this corporate world of criticize in private and praise in public type of thing. But his approach on the soccer field is, no, you give the feedback, publicly and openly at every stage. And then if in that culture of like his team, that's expected and that's okay. So if you get any sort of feedback, that's all it is. And it's there and done straight away. And then you move on from that. And that's something I'm trying to cultivate in our team. We don't really exactly have, but I love that idea of you can just say, because then it's not about the person, it's just about the thing. And we say, absolutely. Okay, if the thing was you messed up on the thing and the thing has to be better, we all agree, we're not going to win this game unless if we keep doing that, and then you move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I haven't figured out how to do it yet for the team. So we'll
I think
back.
The public aspect is great, because if you're giving feedback to one person on your team, if the whole team hears it, then they can learn from that lesson and not make the same mistake, and you're not repeating yourself over and over again. I think it's great.
Yeah. And yeah, if you decouple maybe the sometimes retribution, it feels like it's a retribution or there's going to be some other, and trying to even get feedback the other way across up and down and across in every way is quite difficult. So it's a tricky one, but I get the impression that you like go directly to the source and that's helping you with that.
Yeah. I think the real estate business trained us, because we realized when a tenant doesn't pay, if you give them a little bit of wiggle room, they'll take more and more, and then it leads to them getting evicted. And you're doing them a disservice by not addressing it early on.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought, because you think giving that wiggle room is giving them some grace and allowing them to stay longer, but it really sets them up for failure in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I 100% believe that. And it happens in our business. Sometimes a card bounces like on a subscription. And my thing is always, okay, a card has bounced. We just need to lock the account. And when they get the thing back in, it will be opened up again. And I don't know how many times I've lost count of a success team will be like, oh, let's give them a bit of time and let's do whatever. And it's always, it extends and extends. And then one day you say, okay, we're locking them now. And then literally half an hour later, they page. Oh, could have been all along. It's just that it wasn't urgent enough in their world, which I totally get. So you might as well cut out the middleman, save everyone the time and effort of all the extra emails and
absolutely.
Just get straight to it.
Yeah, well, the energy that went into that collection, and whether that's with a client or a team member not doing what they're supposed to do, it's that follow up. And we've gotten to situations where a client's not doing their part of the work, and we will not have a call until they've completed it, because I cannot change someone's financial situation if they're not doing it operationally. And I've been fired as a CFO because I wasn't able to wave a magic wand and change their business within 6 months. And my recommendations weren't being heeded. So I should have been preemptive and fired that client before it got to that point, because that's a boundary as well, is like you have to hold up your end of the agreement as a client. And I don't know if it's a luxury I have in my approach to this business and not needing the cash flow immediately, but I want to work with people that truly want to grow their business and to change in the way that they want to change. And if they're, I can't do it for them. So if they're not willing to put the work in, that's not the kind of person that I can help. So I'm just wasting my time and my team's time trying to force something that we won't be successful in.
And plus, it's just less fun working with those people, right? Why not just
absolutely.
Work with the people that are fun to work with?
Yes.
Do we have this idea of product market fit, which people talk about? What about owner client fit? I think that's maybe a more important one to start with.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. So maybe you could just tell us a bit about your ideal customer now. We've started to touch on it a little bit, and who should get in touch with you with regards to CFO services.
Yeah, absolutely. So my team and I all had healthcare background. We worked in hospitals primarily. And as we transitioned into this, decided the healthcare space is where we wanted to stay. So hospitals in the US are definitely not a target because they're all owned by big corporations. So we decided to target physician-owned practices and small hospitals that are in somewhere between the $5 to $20 million revenue range based in the US, just because the healthcare system here is very unique. But we feel like we're specifically targeted to help with that. My first day on the job out of college was this Affordable Care Act thing got passed. What do we do with it? So I had to go dig and research, and I've just been in the trenches of US-based healthcare, which we all know is a hot mess. I think it gives us a unique perspective to help these physicians that are trying to navigate it. And they go to school to be a doctor, not to be a business owner. And a lot of times don't have that strategic financial background. So it's a fun place to work and to help them help care for people.
Very good. And I hear you're running a retreat. Is this for that target market then for this?
You can no, tell us a bit about- I have a heart for people in this industry as CFOs and business owners in general, real estate investors. So with this Airbnb my husband and I just bought, It is two cabins in the North Georgia mountains right next to each other, and we can sleep about 30 people. So it's a perfect setup for us to be able to host a retreat or a mastermind. We really have a vision for this place of being a place for families to go and vacation, but also a place for us to really help business owners reach that next step and find their own version of financial freedom. So we are planning over the next year to host a few retreats. My husband's doing some that are male only and going to be very heavy in the masculine energy. He has a plan to go hike one of the mountains, and he's former military, so he wants it to have that boot camp feel, but doing some mindset work. And we've talked about doing some co-ed retreats as well. So just my goal in life is to help people reach their next level, whether that's through my CFO business or helping other entrepreneurs. It doesn't matter to me at the end of the day. It's just being of service and helping people get to where they want to be. Because I feel like if we all are living our ideal dream life, then we're just happier and better people to be around, and makes that grocery store interaction better, and just making the better world for my kids and everyone.
Yeah. That brings us on nicely to your business hero. So I guess as someone who's helped you quite a bit.
Absolutely. My coach, her name is Bunny Young. She is probably one of the most interesting people you'll ever meet. She was a stunt woman. She is insanely tall. She has seven Great Danes. She is just fascinating. She's a business therapist, coach. I don't really know what her title is, but she has helped me just in mindset transformation and really finding out what I want to do with my business and my life. And her perspective has just been very pivotal for me. So I know it's not your standard Elon Musk type answer, but she has had such a profound impact on my life, and I owe a lot of my growth to her.
Very good. Does she know she is your business hero?
I don't know. I'll send her a message later and let her know.
Okay. I'll send her this clip.
Put it on her face. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And thank you for listening. If you got this far into the podcast, congratulations. Your special gift for being such a trooper is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/partners. And there I've recorded a webinar which gives you an overview on how Procurement Express can help you control the business in control costs in your business, rather, or more particularly in your client's business. So it's designed for fractional CFOs who are interested in finding out how to deploy our software to deliver value for their customers. It's about 15 minutes, not that long. And it's got a case study from Ben De La Creta, who is one of our CFO partners, and he'll tell you exactly how he does it. So thanks very much for coming along, Tiffany. This has been a really cool chat. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.